I'm Jodie Walmsley, author, keynote speaker, and happiness expert. I'm talking to you today from the Simply Laughter Online Summit. Now, my next guest is QJ. He's another one of our professional business coaches today, and he comes from Magnetize Your Audience, and he will be speaking to us all about how to fill your workshops. He'll speak about how important it is to have a workshop business and why knowing your niche, knowing your subject, and adding value is so important, and why having workshops are so important. So lots of great business tips to be learned here. Enjoy. Hi, QJ. How are you doing?
Hi, Jodie. I'm good, thanks.
I'm so excited to have you to talk to me today because it's really a topic that I think we need, and it's about filling our workshops. So can you give us a bit of information about your background?
Yeah, sure. Well, I've been putting on events for a very long time. I did my first gig, in the school dormitory, actually, when I was still at school. And because I was always going to be a rock star, I was always going to go into the music business. And, you know, I couldn't wait to leave school. So I was a teenager, 16, 17 years of age. I was at boarding school. And that was the right name for the school because I was bored stiff, you know, like you do get at boarding school. just horrible. So it was, okay, we had a good housemaster. He said, okay, all right, QJ, you can put on this thing in the dormitory, but don't make too much noise, you know, and close all the windows, don't upset the neighbours, all of that stuff. So we did it. And of course, you get all your mates to come along, don't you? Which is actually not that different from what we can do today. What I'm sharing with people is get your mates along to your events. But we'll go further into that later. So I did that. And then as soon as I left school, it was kind of, I'd really got the bug for filling venues with people and giving them a good time. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's really important now. And I mean, you're talking about lots of different kinds of events. You're talking about music events, and then we're talking about now educational events.
Well, I think the lines are completely blurred. I think whether it's, as the BBC says, education, information, or whatever the third thing is, which I completely, entertainment. If we think we're educators, then we should listen to what David Attenborough says about education, because he was asked, what about educate, because you educate people, don't you, David? And he said, well, I don't know about that, but what I do know is that if I entertain people, they will learn something. And I really take that to heart, and I think everyone should take that to heart. Your primary objective should be to be entertaining, and if in that there's learning, within that there's learning, then my God, people will learn stuff from you and you will teach them amazing things, which is exactly what he does. He makes us all, you know, experts on the planet, which is fantastic. And we just have to watch his programs. So I take a leaf out of his book, and I think if we can get people together and entertain them, they will learn something, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I think, is it infotainment? Edutainment?
Whatever you want to call it.
And definitely, I know this, you know, doing laughter in my sessions is something that does, you know, entertain everyone, and it gets them really involved. So it's great, and I really agree with you. So can you tell us a little bit about what a workshop business is?
Workshop business is very simply when all of your efforts are put into, first of all, devising an amazing learning program, whether that's a business learning or it's personal development learning, but it's a workshop or a series of workshops where you are going to give people information, entertainment, education that will potentially transform their lives or transform their business. And for me, the most important factor is your commitment to that process, to making your workshop the best it can possibly be. So you can't cheat people. You can't be half an expert you've got to really know your staff. And I don't think knowledge on its own is enough either. I think you've really got to have had the experience. So someone who's, you know, done, no offense to NLP people, because I think NLP is awesome, but you've done an NLP course and you've got your qualifications and you've been doing it for a year, and you go out there and say, well, I'm going to teach people NLP. I think you need a bit more experience, because not that you don't know your stuff, but it's just that there will be people in your audience who really want to dive deep into the subject. And if your knowledge is shallow, you're not really going to be able to cope with those issues that come up. And I really think that when we're in that workshop situation, when we're leading workshops, we have to take full responsibility for the people we're looking after. We have to make that environment safe for them. We have to really care about them and their outcomes, and then deliver, you know, over and above. So that's my thing. It's really getting to the point where your expertise is, you know, world class. And I really do mean that. I was talking to Ricky Arundel, the speaker, who some of us will be familiar with. And she said, because she's gender changed. She said that she takes a year to write one keynote. And I thought, right, that's what I'm going to take away from this. You put the time and you put the effort into it, and you end up worthy and qualified to stand in front of people and share your expertise and help them move forward in their journey. That was a very long answer, but
it's very powerful, because it's actually a topic that I'm trying to reiterate throughout this summit, because you've got to do your apprenticeship. Because I know, you know, having been speaking about my topic for the last 8 years, I know that if I hadn't have done 3 years of workshops and, you know, training and, you know, learning about it, I could not stand in a workshop or on stage and receive those questions and actually answer them. So apprenticeship, I think that you really did touch on a great topic there or point. And then, you know, why is the workshop business and filling those workshops so important?
Well, you're not gonna make much of a difference if there's nobody there. Mm-hmm. So it's really important that you can teach people. And I'm not talking about huge numbers. You know, I've been to Tony Robbins. I've seen what a room of 10,000 people looks like. And we can all go to those big events and have aspirations to be on a big stage and get loads of people in the room. But actually, that misses the point. The point is that we can each share and serve a number of people with what we've got today. And if we're starting out, we probably don't have a reputation. Not many people know about us. But the important thing really is to get a small number of people who are absolutely sold on you and what you do. They absolutely love it. And I always say, you can't serve the people who don't turn up. And yet a lot of us worry about the people who aren't there. They get six people booked on a workshop and I've only got six people. And they focus on that and they stress about that. But actually, when you focus on the six people who turn up, give them the most amazing experience, what happens is they go out and they tell people, they say, you know, you've got to go to QJ's workshop. It was amazing. And people kind of don't like that because it's a bit small. They want to be big and famous and all that stuff, which I think the world has changed. And start small, grow a little bit at a time. I was reading a book. I do a lot of reading. And in this book, it said, we talk about going the extra mile. And the book was saying, go the extra inch and then go another inch and then go another inch. And actually, if you take that on board, it's steady. It progresses, and you are actually growing and moving forward, and you're growing your fan base, your audience. So that's really my view on, you know, why you should fill them, how you should fill them, and make sure that those first people that you get in the room are absolutely sold on you. They really buy into you, not just buy the ticket, but when they leave on that very first interaction with you, they leave the room and they think, yeah, this person is really very, very good, world-class, hopefully. But, you know, be that good that that's how you start spreading your reputation. It's not actually about marketing at the end of the day, although that's what I do. It comes under that label of marketing. It's about the product being amazing to start off with. You can't market successfully a rubbish product, because ultimately it will fail. So that's it, really.
Yeah, that's actually great, because I actually know one time when I started out and I was having what we call a laughter club, and I was getting 20, 30 people. It was great. And then the one day it rained, I was in Dubai, and I only had 4 people. And I was like, oh, what am I going to do with 4 people? But actually, do you know how solid I am with those 4 people? Because I had that time to interact with them and to get really personal, like, you know, give them what they needed. And it's true. They have grown into my biggest fans. And from there, they told people and it's grown. So it's actually a very good point. We always want to go big, go big, go big. But actually, no.
Yeah, it's kind of the ego. It's the little ego inside us that says, oh, I want to be, you know, better, bigger, more successful. But actually, if we can calm that little ego down and say, we're all right, you know, life's good, I've got something to offer, I'm just going to go out there and be comfortable, relaxed, and really focus on serving the people that turn up, and it works out great.
Yeah, no, great stuff. And then now what happens for those people that don't do a workshop or they say, no, I won't have one?
Do you mean the recipient of it or the deliverer of one?
Well, what is the, you know, what damage could you be doing by just not having a workshop? I mean, how valuable is it?
Okay. So I think the challenge with just doing keynotes, just jumping on a stage and being a speaker and wanting paid speaking gigs is you have no clear knowledge around how engaged your people actually are. And really, I think this is all about, nowadays, it's all about intimacy. You know, even through social media, we're very intimate with each other, even in public. And I know you don't have to be public, you can go on Messenger or one of the other apps that's available. But the whole intimacy thing is really key to good marketing these days, because we're talking about the long tail. I don't know if you've heard about the theory of the long tail. Do you know what I'm talking about there?
No, tell us about that.
Yeah, so before the internet, everything used to be based on the mass market, which is why television, you know, had 13 million viewers, 20 million viewers, whatever. And what the internet did was make it possible by the fact that it was virtual, mean that the costs of having something were reduced. So in the old days, to have a television program, a television station, it would cost millions of pounds to set that up, or to have a recording studio, it cost hundreds of thousands of pounds. But once you got virtual and once you got digital, it means that the cost of these things is virtually nil. And if you think about bookshops and the bookshops that have gone bust and versus Amazon, which is virtual, it's all about how many titles can Amazon stock as compared to Waterstones in the high street. Is this making sense?
Yeah.
What that means is that the small numbers of sales, the niches, the niche works are now available to people. The niche records, the niche books, the niche workshops are actually easy to put in front of people because you don't need a store in the high street anymore. And it was always the cost of storage that was the big thing when you had the mass media and the mass market. And it's called the long tail. And what they're talking about is the head is still the big stuff. But at the tail, there might be a book which only sells, you know, 10 copies a year in, you know, 200 different countries. Now, that couldn't happen through a store, through an outlet, but it can happen on the internet. So that's what we mean by the long tail. So the internet has given us all those little long tails at the end of which there might only be 2 people that might come to our workshop. But those 2 people might be in Africa. And there might be another 2 people in England, and there might be another 2 people. Is this making sense? It's kind of that ability to reach out at very low cost, no cost to actually having the thing exist in the first place, but being able to then deliver it through the internet is fantastic. And so people should stop, in my humble opinion, getting hung up on the mass market and being big and successful and being well known by everybody. Because that's a very old-fashioned thing these days. And all the young people who do the YouTube, you know, become famous on YouTube or become musicians like Ed Sheeran did it on, you know, the internet. you know, that's really the way it's going. So it's about grabbing that opportunity and recognizing that each of at the end of each of those long tails is a small number of people who you're probably perfect for, absolutely perfect for. And in the past, they couldn't find you and you couldn't reach them, but you can now. That's fantastic news.
Yeah, that is good news, because it's true. We all have great messages, and there are people all around that need to hear it. And so it's wonderful that we do have that reach. Can you tell us about how things have changed, you know, with marketing and having events before and now? Are there any differences?
Okay, so the psychology of it is the same, because we're the same human beings as we always were. So when you think about whether you want to go to an event or not, you would think about things like, well, you know, is anyone else I know going? Are my mates going? When I get there, will there be any food? You know, will there be a bar? You know, what is actually going to happen there? Is this a band? If it's a music event, is it a band I've heard of? If it's a speaking event, is it a speaker I've heard of? You will have all these considerations in your head, and that hasn't really changed. But what has changed is the choice. The internet has enabled so much choice that whereas when I was putting on gigs for my band, the only way of getting it out there was word of mouth or posters or flyers. And you'd meet down the coffee bar, and the important thing was to create a buzz around your event, get people talking about it, saying, oh, you know, you're coming on Saturday night to the Village Hall, we're all going there and such a band is playing. And people don't really use that technique today. They don't put on a speaking event or a workshop and create a real buzz around it. Well, some people do, you know, some people are ultra successful and they kind of do that. But we don't, as small providers, we tend not to do that. And I don't really know why, because we're all in show business. We're all in the business of show. And so there is no difference. And there's a lot of the old things that used to be done that people are not doing today. And a lot of those things I would advocate that we do today, creating a buzz around it, phoning radio stations to get radio interviews, you know, and there's a lot of internet radio now, there's a lot of podcasts, so you can go on those to promote your event. And when you speak about your events, or when you write copy for your events, make them exciting. There are so many of these formulaic things, and formulas are good for copywriting to a certain extent. I mean, I myself advocate using certain formulas for headlines and titles, but when you get into the main bulk of the copy, people tend to concentrate on credibility and things like that. You know, oh, I've done this, I've had 1,000 people in the room with me, and I'm fantastic, aren't I? And actually, we're not as interested in that anymore. Nowadays, we're interested in the person. What's their backstory? Do I like them? Are they credible? You know, are they somebody I want to spend time with? That's not really changed from the olden days either, if you think about it. You know, you'd go and see a band because you really thought they were awesome. Even if they were the greatest musicians in the world, that wouldn't necessarily be as important as, are you going to have a good time? So those are the kind of things that are similar but different. Is that making sense to you? Have I described that in a sufficiently clear way?
There is, and you know, you've helped me a lot, and you've helped me with some of my marketing and got me really to think about that. So what are some of the pointers that we should be including in our copy?
Okay, well, the most important thing is, before you do any copywriting at all, is to choose and define a specific audience, the specific problem they have, and the specific solution you have that solves their problem. The reason for that is simple. The internet, as we know, is noisy. Everyone says the same thing. All us marketers say the same thing. There's a lot of noise out there, and you have to cut through the noise. So the way to do that in the model that I share with my clients is not by being louder or shinier or brighter or more different. It's by being very, very specific. The reason for that is, if we've got a specific problem, or we all have specific problems in our lives, whether it's a sore throat or a headache, or, you know, I'm just feeling like an imposter, anything really, we are specific about the symptoms that we suffer on a daily basis. So the way that my marketing works for filling your events is to make it really clear in your marketing about the specific problem that you solve. And then to obviously, I'm ignoring the fact that you may or may not have the solution. You've got to have the solution. Your solution's got to be awesome anyway, but let's put that to one side, because I'm assuming that you've got a great solution for the problem you solve. So be very, very specific about it. So the problem I solve is empty rooms for speakers. And the reason I choose my specific audience to be speakers is because it's an audience of it's a group of people that I've got something in common with. Doesn't always have to be the case. I recently met somebody whose specific audience is dentists. He's not a dentist. He's never been a dentist. In fact, he's had a corporate career. So his expertise is around business. And his story is quite interesting because he gave up his corporate job. He didn't want to do it anymore. And his next door neighbor was a dentist. This is a true story, by the way. quite fascinating. And he was in his neighbor's surgery one day, just sitting there waiting to have his teeth done. And he was looking around and he saw that actually the way that his neighbor, the dentist, was running the business, well, I think the three partners in the business, was not very businesslike. It wasn't very professional. So anyway, he got chatting to him afterwards and he said, you know, have you ever had any business, have you been on a business course or have you had any help with how to run a dentist practice? And he said, no, not really. He said, well, I'm quite interested in, you know, I'm looking for something to do. And would you mind if I work shadowed you and actually came to your surgery on a regular basis and had a look, maybe I could talk to some of your clients. Now, he turned that into dentists being his specific audience. The specific problem he solved, which was dentists actually getting burnt out, actually not being able to cope with running a business, because obviously we all focus on our specialism, don't we? You know, we focus on our speaking or our dentistry or our accountancy or whatever it is. And massively successful at that. He wasn't one of my clients, unfortunately. I'd love him to have been, but he went and found his specific niche. And the other thing, a great thing about that, of course, he's one of the only people doing that. So you don't have to be, your niche doesn't have to be the people who are like you necessarily. But in my case, of course, that was what turned my business around when I thought, well, I'm a speaker. I've been on stage forever. I've done my 10,000 hours behind a microphone, you know, in front of a camera, whatever. So I'm actually like a lot of speakers already. And that worked for me. So in thinking about the audience that you want to have as your specific audience, there's a couple of different ways of looking at it. Either they may be someone that you get, they may be someone like you, an audience like you, that you particularly get on with, or it may be that you spot an opportunity in the marketplace that you can serve with your expertise that marketplace doesn't actually have and really struggles from not having.
And that's so true. And that's coming up time and time again about niching down. Many people are so scared. They have the fear of losing out. And they think, no, I just want to try and throw my net out and hopefully catch people. But yeah, it's so important to niche, as you are telling us now.
Oh, totally. So that's
where
great. The opportunity is. I mean, you can be general if you like, but you won't get the same traction as you get in a niche. Because people will, given the choice, you know, I could say I do marketing and people will, who want to fill their workshops will say, well, oh, there's a marketing guy. He's okay. But here's a guy who specializes in filling workshops. Who am I going to pick? You're going to pick the guy who specializes in filling workshops. And yeah, you're right. The danger people think is there won't be enough of an audience. And it's completely the wrong way to think, because people will find you. If you're the specialist, they really want it. They will find you. Think of people who have, you know, serious diseases, serious illnesses, and they fly to another country to find the right surgeon or whatever. They seek you out if they know that you have that specialism and you've got a problem that not many people can actually solve, or they don't appear to be a specialist. They're much more a general, you know, they're a heart surgeon, but your particular heart problem might be very, very specific. So of course you're going to look for the person who can give you the best chance of success in your surgery. Does that make sense?
It does. And I think, you know, if you do focus on one group of people, you can really make sure that you know everything there is. All your, like you say, your marketing is all aimed at them. Your content in your workshop, in your talk is going to be aimed at them. Because like for example, it seems that I keep getting the CEOs and the CFOs, and it's a totally different language that you have to use to, if I'm speaking to a group of people that are, you know, just out to have fun, you know, so you make it very specific. And that was actually, I've just come back, as you know, from Morocco last, I was there yesterday, and I had a group of CEOs there, and I made my whole workshop about that, about what it's like to be, you know, a business person. What is it at home? What is your relationship at home? Like, what is this? And I made everything just specific for someone who's busy, doesn't have time, and what stresses are related to him. And they really enjoyed it. And they were like so excited that I had the answer to that. And it was, yeah. So I really get that. Yeah. So now, okay. Say we've taken the plunge and we're going to have a workshop. What happens if it fails?
Well, there's no such thing as failure. It's just you didn't get enough people. So it's about building on the numbers all the time. I have a client who started a group a year ago, and it was to run an event once a month. And initially, and actually it was a corporate market, which is much more difficult than an SME market, I have to say, because corporate people have jobs. And even at the last minute, they may have booked to come to your event, but at the last minute, their boss says, oh, you've got to do this report, or you've got to go to this other event. So it's very precarious. The most important thing, as I said, is to nail the problem that you solve and put that in front of people. So for this particular group, the problem that that we solve is how to win your next promotion. So if you're stuck, the problem would be that I'm stuck in this role. I don't have any opportunity to get a pay rise. You know, when am I going to get promoted? I'm really getting hacked off. Maybe I want to leave now. I'll leave and find a better job. So the problem that this particular group solves is to help people put themselves in a position where they will get promoted. And with that particular group, once we'd nailed that, we needed to build the list. And our aim was to build the list to 100 people in a year. Now, that might sound very small, but it's absolutely on target for the model that, you know, I'm helping people with. Because if you have 100 people and you can get, say, 5 to 10% of those people in the room every month. You can get 5 to 10 people in the room every month, and they're not always the same people. By the end of the year, you've been in front of sufficient people serving them and helping them to the point where across the year, there will be those who come and say, okay, well, that's great. Will you come into the company and do this, that, and the other? Will you coach me? Will you do all sorts of things? We've got a project which we'd like you to look at. So that's basically where you start if you want to do, say, a monthly meetup. And, you know, you could be charging, I don't know, £25 a head each month. So don't look at the mistake a lot of people make is to look at each of those kind of taster sessions and monthly meetups, I would call them, as the profit. As long as you cover your overheads and you make a little bit of profit, I wouldn't, you know, want to run them at a loss. But actually, if they run at a loss, that's just your marketing costs. That's your marketing budget. So that really doesn't matter. But most of those things you can make at a profit, you know, even providing food and drink. And then it's the upsell, or the upserve, as people like to call it now, where the money is. And that group's doing extremely well. And it's got a Christmas party coming up, 20 people booked, 20 people in the room, fantastic. And there won't be any learning at that one, but I suspect that because the clientele, if you like, are totally sold on this particular group, you know, it will continue to grow and it will continue to generate more business for the workshop leader involved. And the other thing I should add, if any of you is interested in trying this as well, is it's a group that's by invitation only. So we've created scarcity around it, and you cannot join the group unless you've been interviewed and vetted, and we say, okay, you can join. That's a very powerful marketing technique, and it's not a trick. We haven't used it to trick people. We've used it because actually we want to maintain the quality of the members. We only want to let people in who are high flyers, I was going to say, and people who have, you know, integrity, high ambition, and actually people who are going places. So that's a very good thing to do as well.
Yeah, that's a good point, because people want to be included, and you want to make sure that you've got the right people in front of you that are going to take whatever it is that you're doing, use it, and then pass it on to others that are like-minded. Because just throwing it out there to anybody, it's just a waste of energy. So I do like that. I think you mentioned that to me as well, having that elite group, and then you can really focus on it. And, you know, there's something else that you spoke to me about, which I found very valuable, and it's about the value, funny enough, and it's about finding what value you are giving to people. Why is that so important?
Because information is now free. Anyone can go on the internet, Google stuff, and I mean, they get information and they get misinformation, as we all know. So no one's really going to pay for that. If you try to just inform people about stuff, even if you're a curator and you package up all the latest information, it has a limited amount of value. So the one thing that people will pay for and struggle with is implementation. So workshops should empower people to implement what they need to do, the things they need to take action on, in a way that's right for them. Now, I've struggled. I struggled at school, because at my school you were supposed to do things or come to your conclusions in a particular way. You were supposed, you know, maths, I remember, you, the way you were taught to add up, you know, it was carry one or whatever. They used to use this word carry. I don't know if people do that in school anymore. I was completely flummoxed. I didn't know what the hell are we talking about. I didn't add up like that. So my learning style is very different from, say, somebody else's. And so I think it's really important that we not only can teach people how to implement things, but we can also be aware, we should also be aware of each of the individuals within that room and how they are learning. How are we going to actually ensure that the learning they're taking away is sticking for them? And it may be around motivation. It may be that they know what to do, but when they go to their office on a Monday morning after coming to your workshop, they're sitting there thinking, well, yeah, QJ told me what I should do, but I don't feel like doing it. What's wrong with me? And I think when you're starting out, you know, people say, oh, you know, just go for 100 people in the room, 10,000 people in the room. But that's nonsense, because most people are not going to start out like that. Sure, there are one or two who hit it, you know, they're very lucky, or they're very entrepreneurial and very successful anyway. But most of us, as I've already said, start out with half a dozen people or a dozen people that you can really serve, and you can spot whether they've got a problem. The individual has a problem in the room, and they say, you say, well, come and talk to me afterwards, and you can really serve that individual and give them hand-holding if that's what they need. I really believe in this, because I think there have been so many what I call charlatans that have put on these larger events where they say, you know, we're going to hold your hand all the way through. But then when it comes to it, they may do, you know, group coaching on the internet, webinar kind of situation. You really still don't get the personal service that you actually need. So this idea of, you know, I want to stop, what do they say? I want to stop just, you know, giving my time for money. But I think it's a nonsense, because your time is still the only thing you ever sell anyway. And in the early days, because you want to get people really valuing you highly, I think you still should spend personal time with them, like I'm doing with you now. You know, this is really important. I could do an interview with somebody who's a professional interviewer and then send this interview to 10 people like you. but that wouldn't be as good as you asking me the specific questions you want to ask me, and then I can answer them. And that's exactly the way that I treat my clients. So even if I've got a workshop that's got 10 people, 20 people, 30 people in there, and whatever it is, if somebody needs something extra, I'll always see that they'd get that. Because I know I've been on the receiving end. I've been on those sessions where I've been sold something like that. But did I get it? No. As soon as they left the room, they didn't care about me anymore. We need to really care about our clients. That's what I feel anyway.
Yeah, and that also brings it, you know, when smaller group, you can actually have that control. You can check up on them. You can see, is it working? Are you implementing it? What about changing it? And give them that personal touch. I think that really is important. And another thing that we were talking about was, you know, for me, I'm a speaker. I go out. I get hired to speak in front of 1,000 people, and I lose contact with them because I've been flown in. I speak. I fly out. I don't have any interaction at all. So how can I find out what's actually happening, or what is your input on that situation?
Well, that's very easy, actually. You give them an offer. You offer them something. And you make it what people casually call it a no-brainer, which I kind of don't like those cliche terms because it sounds a bit like it's a cheap tactic. You know, it's a bit salesy, and I don't really like that at all. But what I mean is that you really do offer them something of value before you end your speech or your talk. And you say, you know, I hope that what I've shared with you today is of value, and you will take something away with it. If you'd like to go further with me on this, what I'm offering is, you know, a survey or a bit of a further coaching. People say you shouldn't give your time and energy as a freebie, you know, the automated report. Again, I don't really agree with that. I think when your business is big enough, yes, absolutely. So what I offer is an online questionnaire, which I will give a personalized report to. And at the end of this interview, we'll offer anyone who wants that to have it. Now, you can do that on a live stage. I think you've seen me do that. And it just works a treat, because those people who really want to have a really real interest, and it would be in the problem that you solve, and they probably have that problem, they will send you their email, they will email you or text you or do whatever mechanism you set up, the tool you set up to make that work. So my advice and my Bible says always make an offer, not for money necessarily, although sometimes you can be selling something. I've just seen all the sunlight coming through the window. Can you see that on my...
You're glowing.
It's lovely.
It is. Yeah.
Turned into a spirit of some kind. Yeah. Beautiful weather. So offer them more value. Don't offer to sell them something that's, you know, cheap and not worth it. Ideally, I would still give something for free for people who are interested in going further. Then they register their interest. You see who's got the potential for your business. You're obviously providing value for them. And then you'll know the impact that you had in that room.
Wonderful. So that is valuable. And one thing that I know that I do is, specifically, I'll use yesterday's example. I actually made a set of slides specifically for them where I was going through stress and different levels, because I did about resilience and then about stress, what causes stress, and then how they can actually use laughter to combat that stress and how to deal with it. And then I made a PDF of my slides for that section, and I sent it to everybody. And another way that I would do that usually is to say, does anybody want a copy of this? Please drop your business card. Then at least I get some sort of connection with them. So those are some of the things that I personally use. And actually, you know, another thing is you never know who's going to get back to you, because this job in Morocco actually came from me doing a group of the same group. It was 8 CEOs in they'd sent me to Portugal. And I had no contact with them. I just said the thank you, and I sent them some details. And they rebooked me again to speak to a group of 30 of them. So you see, so you never know. As long as you're adding value, they see that, and then they book you again.
And so now I've sent out my PDF that I've made specifically for them with their logo on it, personalized it to them, speaking their language, and they're very happy with that. So it's a good idea.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I do know that sometimes I worry about losing, you know, because when you get hired to go into a, you know, a talk, you don't actually have that much control over who you can see again. But if you add enough value or give away, or I even have a competition sometimes, give away a book.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of those things do increase engagement. And what you've done is fantastic. I would suggest that if you're just going to send people something anyway, that's doing what you want to do, and you don't really have any idea of did they want it. Whereas if you say, ask me for it and I'll send it to you, then they have to take action. And calls to action are the metric by which we as marketers measure interest. So I don't know whether that makes sense, but if you're better off dangling a carrot in front of them and seeing who responds rather than just giving something anyway. Because if you dangle the carrot and they respond, they are registering interest. And that gives you more data on which to base your next step. And it makes my life a lot easier for us rather than clogging up. I mean, I used to do that thing where you'd get people to put their business cards into a bowl if they wanted something. Mm. And that's fine. But then you've got a lot of work to do, haven't you? Back in the day, I mean, you can do it with tools now, which is what I use and other people do. But then you had to you put them on your database, or you'd send out from an email list, whatever. I think it's use the methods that allow them to self-select, and they will self-select if you've got the problem that they solve. Sorry, if they've got the problem that you solve. That's why I keep banging on about that. But why this being specific is so important. If you're a generalist, yeah, right, most people will probably be quite interested in your general thing. But if you're specific, only those who really want it and specifically have it, that problem, will come through to you. And those then are people far more likely to buy something from you. That's the power of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this particular case, you know, there were a group of CEOs, and I'm talking big CEOs. They had oil companies, and they that really usually the untouchables. And it was the organizer of the YPO that actually said to me, please, can I have your slides? Because we've had some requests for them. So in the bottom, in the last slide, I gave my details so that if anybody would like to get in touch with me, they can, because it is a protected list of people that you don't usually get in front of. And so I know that. And luckily it was from the last one that a lady that was on my 2-day workshop with them, she loved it so much that she recommended that they fly me again to Morocco to meet the rest of the people. And she actually introduced me. So that was a huge testimonial for me, just saying, you know, she said, I spent 2 full days and I still want to hear more. And so, and she has the biggest pharmaceutical company in the Middle East.
Fantastic, great. Really.
So you see, I love that. And so it is all about value. So, you know, we've talked about a lot of things, but now what would be your top tips for us? You know, we are all in the transformational sector, or some of us are laughter yogi, some of us are coaches. What would you say are our top, say, 3 tips for marketing ourselves?
Choose your specific audience. That's critical. You need to choose the people that you can serve the best. So if it's like the previous guy I mentioned, you know, he found that dentists were the people he had something that's really hot that he could offer to dentists that no one else was offering. That is just awesome. So go out on a limb. The point is, let me start again. If you are selling something that's good for coaches, for example, and coaches are your specific audience, there are lots of people selling stuff to coaches. So if you're in that situation, you may have chosen coaches as your specific audience, but then it's much more difficult to break through because you're still in a crowded market. So at that point, it would be the specific problem that you solve for coaches that maybe no one else is selling to them that would differentiate you. However, if you're selling something to police officers, as far as I know, do not have tons of speakers and coaches and workshop leaders trying to sell police officers something. I don't know, I may be wrong. But the point is, it's not very difficult to come up with something that then stands out for police officers, because they're not sold to as much as coaches are. So it's always going to be the balance between who is the audience, your specific audience, how much other people are trying to get at them as well, versus the actual product or service or solution that you're offering. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I think that's great, and I love that idea. So that's a good tip. Any more?
Yeah. Once you've got the three specifics nailed, audience, problem, and solution, only then can you start writing copy, and only then can you start building a proper list. The thing about a list, and I use an acronym for LIST, which is likely income, specific topic. And what I mean is, no one goes on your list unless they are very interested in producing, you know, paying you money, giving you likely income on your specific topic, because only people that well qualified are really likely to spend, you know, maybe a lot of money with you. So likely income specific topic comes from telling them that's why they're going on the list. So for me, I can say, because my three specifics are sorted, I help speakers to fill their workshops. I help speakers avoid the three massive mistakes they make that keep their events empty. That's all I do. Do you want to go on my list, yes or no? So I can put that question out there in the marketplace. I can put it in front of speakers on Facebook advertising. You can do that. You can be that specific. Those people will then say, actually, yeah, I do run workshops. Not getting enough people. Put me on your list. Or I don't run workshops yet. I'd like to. And yeah, I'd like to make sure that they're full as well. That's how building a list really works. And for building lists, of course, there are lots of activities that you would then do based on your three specifics, like give little taster talks. You go out, you know, I can fit my 10-minute taster into somebody else's event. You've actually seen me do it recently. So I can get on the stage at somebody else's event. They give me 10 minutes. I can then deliver my what I do. I can say, if you'd like more, just, you know, send an email saying yes please QJ to win@theoneqj.com. The people who send me an email, I know then they're really interested in my helping them to fill their events, fill their workshops. So that's my giveaways about how to build your list and how to then get people onto that list if you're out there talking about your specifics in public, at your own events or at other people's events. Those are probably the top list building strategies there are. And the thing is, your list is then full of people who are likely to spend money with you. And who doesn't want a list that's like that, rather than, you know, a bunch of people you don't know?
Exactly. And I love that, because, you know, what's the point of sending out loads and loads of emails to a burned list, which doesn't respond, doesn't come back to you? So make sure that it's people that want to hear from you that are going to buy from you. So good point.
Yeah, and totally.
Yeah, you're going to give us the online assessment. Can you tell us a little bit about that? We're going to put a link below. Tell us about the online assessment.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I mean, I've obviously touched on quite a lot today, but this is normally a 3-day event, but the workshop is itself. So what I've done is I've devised a questionnaire which gives you lots of pertinent questions about where you are now. So people are sharing with me their information about their speaking business, where they happen to be now. You know, do they have a list? How many on your list? You know, are you known for something specific already? Are you known as an expert in laughter, for example? That would be you, and you'd answer, yes, I'm known for this thing. And then I will take each of those and work through the answers that you give, and give you a personal report back, actually saying, well, this means that your position is X. To give you clarity on that, your next step would be Y. You know, you can do that on your own. You could come and talk to me about it. Let's do it together. That's really what's on offer. So if you're listening to this interview and you'd actually like to go further and get some clarity around your speaker business and to find out whether your potential as a workshop leader in a proper workshop business is high, low, medium, then that's the thing that I'm offering to anyone listening to this interview, quite frankly.
That's
and
awesome.
All you have to do is send me an email. The email goes to win, that's W-I-N, because you're a winner, win at the 1QJ, the 1QJ, one is O-N-E, so it's theoneqj.com, win at the 1QJ.com, and just as a subject line, put yes, please, QJ. It's ever so easy to do. And that's the other thing, make it dead easy for people to do it. Mm. Yeah, and people do it if they're genuinely interested. And if you're not interested, that's cool. That's fine. I just want to hear from people who I can help.
Exactly. So, we'll make it easy. Happen. Yeah, we'll make it easy, yes, and we'll put a link below.
Yeah, fantastic. So both audio, visual, you know, don't do the kinesthetic with the 1QJ.com, but certainly the audio and the visual, make sure that's clear. I think we've done that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. You've done so much. And you've got a book coming out soon. Tell us about your book.
Yeah, so the book will be Maximize Your Audience, the program's called, and I'm having great fun writing it, 500 words a day in my Facebook group, which is also called Magnetize Your Audience. So if you check out the Facebook group called Magnetize Your Audience, but with a Z, of course, Magnetizes Your Audience, you can join that and get the, like, you know, snippets of the book in advance. But I have a deadline of finishing it New Year's Eve 2017. So after that date, it will be going to the editor and it will be out. And you basically get a free copy, because that's the other thing that I would say to people selling books. Really, I think that's the thing of the past. Your book is a really valuable marketing asset. And give them away to people who are already interested, and get those would be people on your list. So anyone on my list gets a free copy of the book. Of course they do. And it's got the whole methodology within it. So if you can do it, if you can implement it on your own, fantastic. You can have the book, and your only proviso is you tell me about it when you've implemented it successfully. And if you can't implement it successfully, I think you know where I am. So that's it.
Yay, QJ. Wow, you gave us so much to talk about or think about. And I thank you so much for taking the time, and good luck with your book, your writing. I'm watching you all the time. Okay.
Yeah, don't say that I'm behind on my 500 words a day, because I'm behind, but I'm going to catch up. I'm going to have a big catch up. So as soon as we get near Christmas, I'll be going frantic, faster. But no, it's very exciting. And it's not just the book of the techniques to use, but it's also a little bit of my background. So as you go through it, you'll have all fun things about the music business and what I did and how I put on gigs in the past, and how I managed to get 3,000 tickets sold for 3 concerts with Nigel Kennedy when I had my orchestra. So that's quite awesome as well. That was the best gig of my life, actually. That's another story for another day.
I can't wait to read it, but thank you, QJ. It's awesome having you with us. Take care.
Well, thank you. I'm a great pleasure. Thank you, Jody.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.